Warrior Connection. We're back on again. Obviously, the station had some troubles with water and all kinds of stuff, but we're back today. Hey, Ray and Johnny, are you there?
Johnny Berundis here.
Well, yeah, welcome, Ray Johnny. Ray, are you around?
How are you doing, sir?
I am.
Fantastic. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today's a special program. We're back on the air after a while. We've got two very special guests and everything. This program is dedicated to one of the co-hosts of Warrior Connection, Paul Lyons. For those of you who might not have heard already, Paul Lyons on March 8th was having a crisis with his everything medical and all the psych and everything. He called the VA hotline at about 3 a.m. in the morning on March 8th. They turned him away. Everything fell apart. He then called Major Denise Nichols, the other major co-host for our radio program here, and she activated me, and I got a chaplain on the phone, and we got to Paul at about 3:30 or 4 in the morning on March 8th. The VA failed Paul 100%. They didn't do a follow-up. They didn't get anybody out. Everything that was done up to date was done by myself and Denise and Chaplain Brian Manigold, our hotline chaplain, from the Danville, Ileana VA Medical Center. Well, a week ago Sunday, on March 15th, Paul reached the absolute limit. He cut off all contact with everybody during the week. He wouldn't answer phone calls, wouldn't do anything, because his frustration level was at the utmost. He couldn't get the medical care that he required. He couldn't get medical care for his family. He couldn't get medical care for his kids. And he saw no more hope. He saw no more hope. And even though he had found everything and helped so many, many people, he never got the help he needed. And a week ago today, on March 15th, a Sunday at about 2 in the afternoon, Paul committed suicide. It's tearing all our hearts apart, all of us that knew Paul, all that talked to Paul, all that tried to save him. But as we have known, when a veteran reaches a crisis point and reaches the end where they see no more hope at all because of the lies, denials, the inadequate medical care, the non-provided medical care, it all falls apart. Well, let's talk about all of this stuff that's happened. And what I've invited, Ray Clark has been on a radio show multiple times before, and now we've invited Doc, Johnny, and again, these guys were in Vietnam together, man, way over 40 years ago. They fought together, they saved lives together, they had their buddies die together, and now they're struggling. Well, let's talk about suicide and where it all leads to. Ray, you wrote an incredible story, and you gave it to me the other day, that talks about what leads, and one of the facets of suicide. Can we talk about this? I know it's heart-wrenching, but we need to talk about it. Ray, right. The floor is yours, sir.
What I had written about, last September was Suicide Prevention Month, and I was writing a column for a newspaper. And so, you know, being a veteran, having to deal with suicide myself, I went through drugs and alcohol and everything else, and that even, compacted all the depression and everything I was experiencing. And so I wrote a story pretty much about me. And in that story, I talked about Doug. Was the fact is that when you're drinking alcohol, that you began to mix it with drugs, and you're trying to escape the pain and the anger and all these things. And what it does, it causes you to isolate, and it begins to make you think irrationally, and you begin to just only see one way out. And, alcohol has a big impact on people who are depressed. And the people who are depressed don't really need to be drinking alcohol or even using a lot of drugs, because what it's doing is it's driving you into a corner and you're not thinking right. And I hate it so bad when I feel like one of our veteran friends have dropped out of this thing or one of our military people. But usually it's kind of like a downward spiral that begins to work when you're drinking alcohol. And then they go from there. And, you know, Paul went through a lot of pain in those last few days, and I believe he was just trying to squelch the pain and the misery and all those things he was facing. And instead of it becoming like a friend to you, you become a slave to it, and the first thing you know, it just takes over. And I am so hurt and so sorry that Paul experienced all this. And my heart really goes out to his family.
You know, the pain is horrible because we start combining this in so many of the psychotropic drugs that they're giving for PTSD. And those drugs don't really go to dealing with the PTSD, the causes of their cures, because all they are is a panacea. But these psychotropic drugs have all kinds of indications and bad side effects. It starts the brain going off in weird ways and suicidal thoughts.
Right.
And then when you start combining the alcohol, I mean, over the years, I mean, you, all the three of us have seen horrific consequences from alcohol from the guys in the military during active duty.
Right.
And since, I mean, God, where do we go to? I mean, Johnny, you're on a super response force too, aren't you?
Correct. That's correct. We actually got sick and tired of what we saw going on, so we formed a few of us combat veterans in the area here in eastern North Carolina, formed a team along with other retired guys in the area, what we coined the Joint Veterans Crisis Response Team. Well, we'll respond to crises, you know, we've got our number set up. We'll respond when these young men and women, Vietnam veterans, multiple generations have called us. We can kind of sit there and talk to them because we have been there, done it ourselves, and then lead them to the next source of help. And where I say help is the VA hospital, after getting a lot of runaround in the beginning that this happened to my son in August of 2013, I was able to find a few like-minded individuals in the VA system here in North Carolina that thought the same way we did. So we developed a coalition with them in order to get these folks some help on the moment if needed be, 24/7. Now, how we've done that, okay, is we've gone through, and this is so simple that nobody's ever thought about this. Okay, so I need everybody to write this down. It's simple. It could be duplicated in any VA hospital. Is find out who your suicide prevention coordinator is. Find out who the psychological emergency clinic counselors are. And once you do that, then all that you have to do, when you have a veteran, an active duty member, a family member that's in that crisis moment that Paul was in, and you know, my heart goes out to him. And it should never happen, and we can't let this happen ever again. I kind of went off topic there, but when you find out who these people are, write them numbers down, because all it takes is a phone call to get these folks into a clinic 24/7. That psychological emergency clinic is in every VA hospital, and that's where you get these folks to. You can get them there. They'll see them. They'll keep them. They'll get them some help. It happened to my son. Okay. But not knowing that system and that labyrinth of a VA hospital, you call a number or the VA crisis line, and I don't down talk the VA crisis line, but they're up in New York City. There ain't much they can do with boots on the ground. Okay, the local VA hospitals is where this needs to happen with veterans that get their care there.
You know, National Hotline does, and we got so involved with them when Paul's suicide, because he literally called them and he was turned away. And as Ray, as you've already seen the documents, and I don't know if I sent them to you, Johnny, last Friday we had another local family here in Rantoul that called the hotline, and the hotline hung up on them.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, in the middle of a crisis, they just hung up on them. And I've had that happen to me personally. So when I called the hotline up again the other day and I yanked their chains, they did call his family back up. But in talking to the hotline, since Paul had committed suicide and all this stuff fell apart, what I have found out is if it happens on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and you call the national hotline, that's at 1-800 number 273-TALK,
yes.
What they do is they refer you back to the suicide prevention coordinator at your primary hospital. Well, what we're seeing and what I've learned in the experience I've had, when the guy can't get the primary medical care to begin with at this through his primary care physician, he can't get any help there at their local VA. And then what happens, the hotline just refers him back to the people that created the problem again without any resolution of a problem. And we know that's exactly what happened to Paul, because when he called the hotline, there was no follow-up or anything for Mountain Home down there in Arkansas. There was no follow-up at all for the main clinic, which is farther away, 3 hours away from him, and it all totally fell apart. When I talked to the suicide prevention coordinator here at the Rantoul, for our area in Rantoul, which is back over at Danville, Illiana VA Medical Center, and I talked to Nicole, she told me to call my congressman. And I said, we need to get these reports out, these documents. These are what the medical care is being denied, delayed, and ineffective, and it's falling apart. And instead of saying, okay, we'll coordinate, hey, call your congressman, hey, call a veteran service officer in the American Legion or VFW, they might be able to help you.
Wow.
Well, look, I mean, you talk about everything else. I mean, Paul was instrumental in getting everything out about Camisea. He was the guy that got the info out. He was instrumental in getting all these written orders and regulations that exist that he found that he got copies of out to the veterans population, out to use to force the VA to provide medical care. And as you've seen and you've read, Ray, he couldn't get a wheelchair ramp. He couldn't get proper care for himself. He couldn't get care for his family. And what we have seen over and over again, and the same thing they call me, the spouses have come down sick because of cross-contamination. The spouses have got frustrated with the other loved ones because of the effort they have to put in to take care of the sick vet. The kids get sick, and they can't understand why their families are disintegrating. So we have incredible levels, this totally documented child and spouse abuse. We have incredible levels of frustration because, well, even though the internal directives confirm the health effects from the toxic exposures and direct medical care, like on the burn pit, they hide them from the vets. I mean, frustration level as a veteran has got God almighty.
Doug, it's also a fact is that most of those family and children never say anything. Nobody knows what's going on. The veteran is going through trauma, terror, crisis, you name it, depression, hyper, but then if you add any kind of substance into that mix, you've also got just major problems because the family is being affected by it, the children are being affected by it. It's like you said, domestic violence, sexual abuse, spousal abuse, all those things are prevalent, and nobody's even looking, and the VA turns their eyes sometimes. I believe the VA is wonderful in a lot of things, but they're a big, slow-moving piece of machinery. And, you know, I look at what's going on right now, and it's like, you know, you've got a hospital where you get major surgery done, and you get all this kind of stuff. But then below that, you have clinics that you go to, and that's a little pre-op kind of thing. But what Johnny is talking about is the first responders. These guys are down in the bush, you know, they're down there on the ground. And when we hear a guy that's, when they call, or we've had their mother call and different things like that, and say, my son is really contemplating suicide, he hasn't been out of his house in a year. Well, then I call, or Johnny calls, or one of the other men call, and we make contact with the guy, and we began to talk to him. We build a bridge between him and us, because we are military, and we are combat veterans, and we understand some of the ramifications of what combat does to the human spirit. And so we're able to give them some kind of help, but we try to get them medical help or meet them at the emergency room or help them somehow to get resolution, because the family is going to be the ultimate sufferer in this thing. And we see it all the time on the news where a guy goes crazy and shoots his whole family or something happens, or, you know, it's just crazy. We had a guy here in New Bern, a little 40,000 person town, the other day, a neighborhood. One of the neighbors, he was from one of the Middle Eastern countries or somewhere, but he took a machete and went next door and killed three children. One was a one-year-old, and one was about 5 years old, and someone else. And then he cut somebody else, and for no reason. They don't know why he did it, drugs or whatever. But, you know, we find this all the time, and it's always mixed in with substance abuse. And so we've got to learn how somehow to get rid of this thing that is causing these guys so much pain. You just can't think straight, and that's what we have to try to help them to understand you've got to find help. You know, when I wrote those coping skills, Doug, in my book, I didn't write them just to take up space. These things are things that I use in my life to help me to neutralize those panic attacks and that depression that, you know, comes over me. And I know Johnny does the same thing. I'm sure you do, too. We have times when we're so depressed we don't know what to do. You have to learn certain coping skills and things that do work, just like the nasal inhaler I told you about. That thing really works. You take a Vicks nasal inhaler and you really take some good breath in with this thing through your nose, and what it does, it opens up your sinuses and nasal passages so you get a little oxygen to your brain, and then you're able to calm down a little bit. We just find so many. You take like Paul. It wasn't just Paul. Paul had a lot of collateral damage around him, and it seemed like people were hollering, but they weren't hollering for help. And it just creates a very terrible problem. We got to find a way to get to these guys. And
no, one of the things, and it bothered me so bad because since you knew Paul already from the radio show, Ray, and you've talked to him and worked with him and everything else. I mean, when he hit the crisis point, and then I notified you of what happened, you responded back that you had 59 Marines at Camp Lejeune on suicide watch that were in a crisis mode there at the same time you were dealing with Paul's thing.
Right.
I mean, it was just like a kick in the teeth. My God, what is going on? I mean, it's on the active duty side. It's in the guard, in the reserves. It's in the retirees. Yeah. It's in those guys that just came back and just got released from active duty and turned away with nothing.
Right.
I mean, you got guys that can't get jobs. You got guys that are sick and can't get medical care. And they can't get a proper job because they're so darn sick that they can't do it. We're looking at 50% with neuromuscular problems. We got 50 to 60% with short-term memory and memory problems.
Yeah.
And then somehow we expect, or they expect them, they're going to have a normal and a rational life.
No.
Right away. If I can say something, this is Johnny again. What I found, what helped me after many years of avoiding the subject, of boozing it, just major problems, anger management problems, all kinds of problems. A buddy of mine took me to the hospital, to the Durham VA. I started getting some help through many years of counseling. That leads me to where I'm at today. Okay, so that's what we, as combat veterans, period, we have to do whatever it takes without taking no for an answer. So when you get a hold of that suicide prevention coordinator, if that's not the right suicide prevention coordinator, like when this first happened to my son, and I'm not going to get into the details of what happened to my son, okay? Two tours in Iraq, two in Afghanistan, came back with a lot of major problems, and Ray, you know the story on that.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the Durham VA and knocked on about every door that I could knock on. Most people that work for the VA system, and here's a little secret there, is they don't really like their job, so they're not doing whatever it takes, and it's really hard to fire somebody in the federal government due to the unions and everything that ain't doing their job. So it took months and months of hard work to find somebody in that hospital that's willing to do their job, number one. And fortunately, it happened to be a Marine, combat veteran, who happens to be the suicide prevention coordinator at the Durham VA. Not every VA is going to have a Marine combat veteran in that position. I met him. He led me to the psychological emergency clinic. That's how we are getting these folks some help. And I realize not every hospital is going to have that one person like we're fortunate enough to have in Durham, because I put them to the test time and time again since then, and 99% of the time they've stepped up to the plate. Now, when they don't step up to the plate, that's when we have to advocate on behalf of our warriors and their families and not take no for an answer. They need to realize that we're not going to sit back and just take the status quo as the normal, and we can't sit back here on our duffs and wait for our leaders to make the decision, because they can't even get the budget right. So every day we got more than, and statistically, and this is what the government agrees on, and so you can triple these numbers, 22 veterans a day are taking their lives. Unacceptable for even one. But it's more like 120 is what it is, and that's the truth. We don't have time on our side to get these leaders to sit down and make a decision to get ready to get ready. We got to rise up from the bottom, us combat veterans, and go up there and demand that they see these folks and demand that they do the aftercare that's necessary. Like my son, who's in aftercare now, demand that they do it, period.
You know,
and that's what's working.
The whole thing that is so frustrating with this stuff, and I've got to go back. I mean, the three of us went to Vietnam before we could friggin' shave. I know. I mean, I went over the first time on my first arc light and V-52s in March of 1969, and then came back for a few months, and then went over on Thanksgiving Day in 1969 and stayed till June of 71 because I was B-52 crew and maintenance avionics at Bomb-Knob Hardhat. And we bought into all of this stuff. And then when we went to Desert Storm, I first bought into all this stuff until I realized, and you guys, Ray, I know if you've seen the documents, Johnny will have to share them with you, Iraq absolutely had the chemical and biological weapons at the beginning of Desert Storm because the U.S. Army sent them to them out of Fort Detrick, Maryland, to use on the Iranians and the Iraqi Kurds.
Oh, yeah.
That turned into a friggin' nightmare. And then you got all of these casualties, and then we put together Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, and the actual D-Day for Operation Iraqi Freedom was November 20th of 2000. None of this had anything to do with 911, zero, nada, not at all. And so now the vet gets into this stuff, he buys into this stuff, he gets over there, he finds out these guys just want to live a normal life. We've gone in, we've destroyed their country, we're killing men, women, and children. We're taking over, and we've overthrown their government. We put in puppet governments. And now all of a sudden I find out, wait a minute, it ain't for what I thought it was, because these guys pose no threat to our nation or our government or pose no threat to our sovereign rights and our Bill of Rights. I mean, it's just kind of like it's economic domination and control. And then all of a sudden, when this reality hits you, you're going, Jesus Christ, this is bad. I mean, it goes to the core, to the soul, to this whole concept of moral injury. And that depth of moral injury ain't nothing that any medication can solve.
No.
And as the kids you said, then what they do to try and solve this is they go self-medicate, and they use booze up the wazoo, and they use street drugs up the wazoo. And Jesus Christ, it all goes to hell.
How long have we been in the Gulf now?
Well, we first went in with the troops, I know, for Operation Desert Storm, and the guys, we started training going over there for what became Operation Desert Storm or Gulf War One in April and May of 1990.
Right.
I mean, I went over there right after Thanksgiving in 1990, and we did this stuff
25 years,
here.
Really.
I was there even before that. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division. And so I was a little bit boots on the ground a little bit before that in the midsummer of 90.
You were in the 82nd?
Yeah, I was in the 82nd.
You know, we set you guys up, and the 82nd came on back on down to Escan Village, and they didn't have any supplies, and they were going around with a truck hitting up on the supplies and everything. And I know they ripped off our medical supplies, but then when we saw what they were going, we chased them down and found out who they were, and they were heading back up north of Riyadh to where they had their base, and we said, yeah, you can have them, but how many more do you need?
Yeah, they kind of sent us over there with half of what we needed. You know, had to do a few things. Yeah.
Well, you know, what I was saying was 25 years, basically, when you look at it. But, you know, the idea is that a war is profitable for that country. Whatever country that is having that war, they're building empires out of the, supplying their troops, and they're sending them over there. The economy is doing good. Everybody is working, and everybody's paying taxes, and we're losing a lot of young men that would have had children, so you're cutting back on population. And a nation does that, and that's why they keep it going for as long as they can. They don't care about their troops. And when the troops come home, You know, America takes care of their veterans better than any country in the world. But I declare they have got so many now, these guys are living longer, and they're still taking care of World War II veterans, and you have every war since then, and it's just a piece of machinery that just is just got so huge and overworked. And I really believe that a lot of these people in the VA, they're walking on eggshells right now. And so anytime there's a crisis, they're going to try to stay away, far away from it as possible, because they don't want their name brought up in a lawsuit, or they don't want their name on the in the newspaper. So when a guy calls and said, I got a crisis here, they hang up on you. Maybe you'll call somebody else. And I think it's just something we've got. But what do we do about it? We have to approach it, like Johnny said, from the ground up, where guys are going to have to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And we have to organize, and we have to be there when a guy calls in. We can't depend on nobody doing it. We have to do it ourselves. And that's what units on the ground do. So that's my solution to it, is that. So,
just, you know, Doug, like Ray, the quote he was giving you, the 59 wounded warriors on Camp Lejeune, I was there along with Mike McNeely, another Vietnam vet. Now, I'm not a Vietnam vet.
You know Mike McNeely?
And Mike McNeely is my best friend.
No, no kidding. Well, his father is my best friend here. And, you know, Bill McNeely Jr. is the one that was abandoned and dumped off at the Danville VA, and he ended up dying right before Christmas.
I know that. Yeah, right. I know. It's a sad, sad story. And that's why Mike and all of us got together. We decided that's what, prior to this, that's why. When we sit down around the table and we were like, look, it don't matter why wars are started, because you know what? That's above my pay grade. You know, guys like us fight them, okay? So I ain't got time to sit here why the war was started. Doesn't matter, because we're there. But now we got to police ourselves up. So we have to do it by ourselves. And when we developed the Joint Veterans Crisis Response Team, one of our first goals when we sit around that table, we said we have to get on the active duty military basis where the axe meets the stone and get these guys before they come veterans and get them some help. No matter where that help comes from, the community, the VA, doesn't matter. My wife started a nonprofit, hired therapists to solve problems in this stadium, so we have that as well too. But we went to Camp Lejeune. We finally got on after working feverishly. We've gotten on the bases. We're working with the Wounded Warrior Battalion and sitting there with their command sergeant major 2 weeks ago is when she told us we have 59 of our Marines, male and female, and there's a few Navy corpsmen in that mix too, on our active suicide list. Immediately we said, well, what are you doing about it? Well, you know, we're trying to, but they didn't really have a plan. You know, we're just watching them. You know, but I mean, you know, really, what are you doing with these 59? So Mike and I went to the hospital, to the Naval Hospital, which is right around the corner. We went to hook up with, believe it or not, the Naval Hospital has a suicide prevention coordinator, too. And, Ray, you know who she is. You introduced her to us.
Right.
We went up there knocking on her door. We just showed up out of the blue. She came out and saw us, and after we talked to her, she said, hey, look, if you guys want to be part of this solution, then why don't you come in here, talk to the Marines that we got just starting this intensive outpatient therapy and help us help them, because we really don't know what to do. So Mike and myself that day went into that group of Marines. There was male and female in there. We started sharing our personal experience with them and what we've done. And they got more out of that than they would have sitting there all day long listening to somebody tell them something that they read out of a book. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about, Doug.
That's the whole thing. And I know Mike, and Mike's been on this radio show before, and I know his whole family. I mean, his brother is one of my best friends over here. And in fact, the Ray I got to Ray is from John.
Yeah, and Mike and I were in the same company in Vietnam, only 3 years difference.
Well, I knew that, and Mike's work on the POW has become legendary. I mean,
he's not done yet. He's still in the hunt, passing out POW MIA stickers, and he's always doing that. And Mike's one of my heroes. And I've met his brother Bill. He's came to North Carolina. We've had dinner together. He's a great guy. So, you know, Doug, what we have to do is we don't have time to BS around. I mean, as the moment, since we've been talking to another couple of veterans, not even including the active duty military that's killing herself, it's so avoidable. But we're going to have to start it boots on the ground, from the ground up, and then they'll start listening to us because what they've been doing is not working, period.
That's right.
It doesn't work. There ain't no reason to even go to them that are creating the problem to try to fix it. We need to fix it ourselves and then take it to them, and this is what's working, this is what we're doing, you know, and this is how to do it. Because like Ray said, the bottom line up front is we put a lot of focus on the warrior, but there's a family. There's a story behind all this. Families are being torn apart. Kids are being raised in dysfunctional homes. Think about it. And this just ain't since we've been in, you know, Vietnam. Go all the way back to the Second World War, even before that. Start thinking about it, the things that happened. I mean, I just spoke. Good friend of mine's a Battle of the Bulge. He's 89 years old. His name is Philip Pullen. Telling me the story today. I mean, he's finally just barely getting some help now. He's 89 years old, 70 years after the fact. Unacceptable. The ball has been dropped for so long that it's going to be up to us right now to take the ball and run with it.
Well, you know, and that's the thing that bothers me. I mean, all three of us are young puppies. I mean, I'll be 66 in a few weeks, and you guys are a couple years older than I am.
Actually, I'm 53, buddy. I'm a younger guy.
He didn't. He wasn't in Vietnam. He was Gulf War, and he was
Panama,
in the Marine Corps.
Gulf War, Somalia, and Bosnia. Yeah.
Well, you went to Somalia. I mean, I have to send it to you, Johnny. I've got the medical order that I helped write and force because we used depleted uranium in Somalia, and I forced one of my old buddies to cut the order to provide medical care for everybody. I was, at that time, when you went over to Somalia, I was acting commander of the 428th at Port Eustis, and I had to deploy those guys to Somalia, and half didn't come back. They had a real bad day over there. I think everybody knows about that in history.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those were my guys.
And wow.
Well, we see the injury.
To do it, and with Desert Storm, I mean, Johnny, you're just learning. Ray has seen it, and the Woodrollo stuff that I sent you earlier today.
Right.
And Rollo went into crisis, and Rollo and I were a part of Bowers Raiders in Desert Storm. And Rollo goes all the way back to Vietnam. Ray, you remember what the LERPs were and what they did, and they didn't exist, and they don't exist to this day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, see, I think what we see a lot of time is the visible scars, but at the inside, you're talking about a lot of times. What you're focused on, Doug, is trying to get the guys help who have been hit by weapons of mass destruction and biological and chemical, and you know, the government's always denied that anyway. These guys are having so many problems that are popping up that one of these days they're going to have to acknowledge it. But how many do you have to lose before they do that? They said, you know, some of the estimates say that Vietnam veterans, there's over 90% divorce rate, and there's been close to 250,000 suicides since Vietnam.
And that for on me, and this is one of the things that happens, and we've talked about this already over and over again, is that I was lucky. I was raised in a family where, you know, I had an education and we had total stability and support all the way around.
Right.
But with this new army that they got, and the Marines and the Navy, these guys are coming in because they have no other hope for education or involvement, and they're in such a horrible family situation where they live.
That's right.
They join the military to escape. Now, these get into the military. Now they're thrown into a situation that they have absolutely no coping skills for. They get sick, and they have nothing to fall back on. They have no education, and now these guys can't even go on to get an education because the brain is screwed up, and their physiological status is screwed up. So how do they get from class to class in a college environment? And how do they do the coursework when they can't remember their own name?
And how do they pay the bills? How do they pay for tuition? How do they do a lot of things, you know? And they're just in a state of, I don't know, it's like you don't know which direction to go in. And so a lot of them are like that. They joined the military because they thought they could get a head start in life. and they found out it wasn't what they thought it was, and then they come out. You know, a lot of them are giving up after. Well, I talked to a Marine the other day at Wounded Warriors. I think he said he'd been over deployment seven times. And you could look at the guy's eyes.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, his eye, he was a staff sergeant, and he was probably about 30 years old the way he looked. But, I mean, you could, his eyes look like dark eyes that you look inside, and you'll see a whole lot of light in there. And it just has a way of eroding everything about you. I know when I came back from Vietnam for a long time, I couldn't feel anything. I just lost all my feelings, and I shut down, and I lost so many friends. I didn't want to make any more friends because I didn't want to lose them. And, you know, my book tells all those things about that. But it takes a long time to ever get to the point. I think a lot of Vietnam veterans, a lot of them got two and three jobs. I know I did. And we try to work ourselves to death so we didn't have to think about it. But every time you lay down at night to go to sleep, you can't help what you're dreaming about, and you can't help what goes on in the middle of the night. And I would wake up, my eyes would be stuck together from crying in my sleep, and I'd have to open my eyes, and then I would, the dreams I was having to lay there and kind of try to make the dream end better. But every time I woke up, all my buddies were dead still, you know, and I don't know how you get past that. The only thing I can tell you is it is a never-ending war. That was the name of my book, and because it is never-ending. But we do have to find ways to cope with this thing. You have to, or you will become victimized by it. I wrote those coping skills. I wrote that book. I wrote a lot of things in there. And I will tell you this, too, Doug, and you know this for a fact, and Johnny does. I did become a Christian, and the good Lord has helped me tremendously. He gave me peace, and he gave me forgiveness that I needed over a lot of things in my life. But that peace right there has been my stronghold. The medication was good that the VA gave me 30 years after I came back home, and the medication and the treatment was good. But I declare, you've got to have peace in your life. And if you don't have peace, these guys have been married 8 and 9 times and 10 times. And then you get into alcohol, you get into drugs, you get into domestic violence, you get into sexual molestation of children. You're living in a house with a person that they have children that run around, and there's no blood between anybody. And first thing you know, I mean, it is a big ball of mess.
And, you know, I was so lucky because, I mean, I came back, got out and came back to Vietnam in June of 1971, which was really crazy, as I came back from Operation Desert Storm in June of 1991. I mean, you know, God Almighty,
there,
20
Doug.
Years later, and been through all the different stuff. But in both cases, and what happened for me, I mean, I literally got out, and I went back to the university, and I was lucky to get an education, lucky to have a support network, because the guy I worked for at the University of Illinois, he had been a Korean War vet. And our department head was a World War II vet. He's still alive, by the way. He's about 95 years old right now.
Wow.
But
you ought to thank
it was a whole different ball game. And what I'm sensing when I look at the demographics today, and I've been a college professor and I've taught military stuff, these guys didn't have the adequate education when they enlisted in the military. Then they're all screwed up.
Yep.
Then they can't get back to get either a vocational education or an academic education after they get out. And they've got a family to support. And as you said, you've got a whole different group that their support network and their family structure was basically non-existent before they got thrown into this nightmare.
Right.
And then the nightmare has just come, I don't even know it, it's not incremental changes. I mean, we're exponential changes.
Right.
It comes down to the same thing. I mean, when we get a crisis coordination, a crisis problem, and what I've learned through the thing and doing it, you don't want the cops responding as if they're going to a SWAT call. What you want
Right.
is a trained chaplain with a response team like yourselves and a trained medic going out there that can stabilize the individual and get them the medical help and understand the medical needs in accordance to the psychological stability needs. And it does come from God. I mean, Ray,
yeah.
You're right. It does. That's a fundamental to pain management, to medical care, to peace and justice and everything.
It does. It really does.
Now I'm going to tell you guys a quick story, real quick, about my son. I'm going to get into this now that you mention it. My son was 20 years old when he joined the military. He graduated school at 18, got into college, okay, was in the second year of college, came up to me and said, "Dad, I'm going to go serve my country. I got to be part of the solution and not the problem. Our country's under attack." I tried everything to talk him out of doing it. Okay, he did it. He deployed, okay, went not once, not twice, not three times, but four times. Out of a seven-year military career, he spent four and a half of it, almost 5 years overseas. Now, he could have done, his ASVAB scores were off the case. He could have done anything in the military that he wanted to do, but guess what he chose to do? 11 Bravo Infantry kicking indoors. Okay. Ryan came home. Now, let's dial the clock up 7 years later to January 2013. Now that you're talking about police, my son went through so many changes in the military, came back with chronic severe post-traumatic stress. The VA dropped the ball. My son was shot right next to me by a police officer who showed up like a SWAT team. His plan altogether was to get a cop to kill him. Have you ever heard of suicide by cop?
Yeah, I got many people we've known that have done that, and
yeah,
I think
did.
That's where Paul was doing, because the police, you know, in confrontation, as Ray knows, happened that night when he went all to hell in a handbasket on March 8th. Yeah. I mean, that's where they see the out of the pain. They don't have the courage or the guts to do it themselves, and it's wrong, but they see no option. So they figured, well, these damn cops are coming as a SWAT team when I tell them I'm a vet and I'm in trouble, and hell, then the next thing you do is confrontation. And bang, bang, pop, pop.
Yeah, he shot him with a high power.
That leads us to another part of what we're working on since that happened. And my son lived through it. Okay, he was lucky. Okay, and that was his fourth time, because the night before that, he drove his car into a tree at 115 miles an hour. A week before that, he took two bottles of pills and was in a coma for 4 days. So this guy was actively trying to do it. Okay, he couldn't accomplish the mission. He came to me. He said, "I can't do it myself because I've tried." He wrote it, and I went out and pissed his car out from around a tree the night before. 115 miles dead, head on into it. He didn't get a scratch. So he said, "Obviously, I'm not doing it right. I'm going to have somebody else do it." Okay? I saw him do that. Now, what we've taken outside of not only our partnership with the local mental health professionals, we've gone through police departments. They have crisis intervention training here now, where we do segments, and Ray, you've been on a few of them.
Yeah.
We're taking this problem to law enforcement, and this is what can happen if you show up when you're to deal with the veteran with the SWAT team. Somebody's getting shot. Somebody's getting killed. And we can avoid this problem to de-escalate. So we're working with a lot of law enforcement agencies in the area and mental health, not just the VA, but mental health providers, to set these crisis intervention week-long courses for law enforcement, firefighters, and emergency personnel to go to. And we have a few-hour block of instructions on how to handle veterans that are in that crisis mode that more likely than not are trying to coax you into killing them. And so we've been able to implement a few programs in this area with our crisis intervention team. And quite honestly, the suicide prevention coordinator from the Durham Hospital, he actually works with me on that program. So I can't speak for other VA hospitals and other suicide prevention coordinators. Doug, whoever that suicide prevention coordinator that you spoke to, whoever she was, needs to be fired, and she needed to be fired last year.
Yeah, we've already called for that, and we're waiting for a response. I mean, one of the problems we have into, and Ray has seen some of this, and Johnny, we can share this with you, is in my work at the contamination, trying to clean up and medical care for all former Chinook Air Force Base people in the gross contamination there, the Air Force came after me with VA officials, and they've since been fired, trying to prevent me from doing it. And on the day that I had all the documents with me, this is totally video photograph, TV station photographs and everything, I physically was attacked by the EPA and the police officers with the Air Force in order to prevent me preventing the information out that's never been presented. And this is what we see happening all over. I mean, and this is where Rollo's frustration, and I know Paul's frustration with Lovell, because, I mean, Paul Lyons, ladies and gentlemen, as you know him, was instrumental in getting information out to ensure medical care was provided, but he couldn't get the medical care, and that's what happened to Rollo yesterday. That's what happened to Lloyd and Kathy when last Friday they tried to get help, and they called the hotline, and the hotline hung up on them until I called the hotline back up and ripped their butts.
Yeah, that's
all part of the thing. And then where your son, and I didn't know this until just now, your son bought into the 911. He won over our nation's being attacked.
Oh, yeah. He bought hook, line, and sinker, and I did everything to talk him out of it. I was like, Iraq has nothing to do with 911, blah, 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 blah. He wouldn't have nothing for it. He bought it hook, line, and sinker, dropped out of second year of college, which, by the way, he was on a scholarship because he graduated at the top of his class. So he dropped everything and went.
Well, you know, and Ray and I, we've just written an article on Sniper for, by the way, Ray, that's been published in the Gun News. The first half was published a couple of days ago, and I have to get it to you, and the second half comes out. So that's online, you know, at gunsavelive.com.org. And anyhow, that's what happened to Ray. When we look at, in all this stuff, when we look at Chris Cale, who's now the sniper, and American Sniper has all come out, he bought into all this stuff, and he went over there and did an incredible job. And what he had to do to save our troops, we've written up and it's documented, and everybody knows it now. But Ray and I both picked this up, and anybody that knows what's happened, that man and that family were in total crisis, total air shutdown, horrible, horrible consequences as he came back from each tour.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's no doubt in my mind at all, this guy that did murder him and his buddy when they tried to help him, said, oh, well, we're going after the King of the Hill. This is the new John Wayne. This is the new Rambo. You know, and he's the epitome of the reason I'm in horrible condition.
Yeah.
God almighty. I mean, when does it stop? Because the thing that bothers me and I think that drives it is when everybody buys into the lies, and we all did, and we all have, and we're all going to again, and then we find out what the reality is. The damage to the moral, to the soul, to the core is so severe that there are no medications. And because there are no medications, everybody drops back on alcohol or the street drugs, and or they abuse their prescribed medications. God almighty.
And let me tell you a little story on the prescribed medications. Now, I'm talking on the psychological, I call them hallucinogens, that they're giving some of our troops. Okay, these so-called psycho drugs, they actually make these guys more psycho than they would be outside of them drugs. You know, especially let's take one, for instance, Seroquel. There's a group of doctors that did a study on Seroquel that the active duty military in 2004 started prescribing, especially more so in the Army, prescribing to their active duty soldiers that were dealing with anxiety, Seroquel. Here's what happened. From 2004 to 2010, suicides tripled. Domestic violence within the military, 48% increase. Child violence, hitting your kid, 42% increase. Guess what didn't decrease? Any problems. That was a problem with the drugs that they were prescribing to these young guys, because they were taking these drugs and boozing it at the same time.
Well, I mean, my doctor, and you're trying to sedate him, but you actually are causing more problems.
Yeah.
And if that guy is doing anything substance-wise, he's just compounding it all, and he's creating a real chemical nightmare for himself. He's going to end up either a basket case or dead. And, it takes a long time to get a study back, Johnny, of how many people have died because of these things. So,
oh, gosh. Well, we might be told the truth one day, but, guys, here's the world that we live in, okay? The world that we live in is they're going to continue to keep doing what they're doing, okay, until everything ends and we start back over. Okay? But in the meantime, what do? We go to war, with the army that we have. What do I mean by that? It's we right here at the battlefield of life, helping these young men and women. We have to help them ourselves. No, whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes, you know, start a local crisis a team yourself. Get a few guys that are sick and tired of sick and tired in your area and do what we've done here, because we have helped save a lot of lives here. And we continue to talk to these guys. We set up group sessions at our VFW. Before, there was none. I mean, I'm talking 7 months ago, there was nothing happening there. We got a group that meets twice a month at our VFW with over 40 guys in it that we've actively helped talk off the ledge that are now getting, you know, some help just there around with us. So it's a point of not just leading them to that help, but following up and following through and ensuring that they're getting the proper help, because all of us were taught, you know, in the military, and yeah, we bought into the lie and we bought into all that, but the bottom line is we bought into it, and until things change, more people are going to buy into it. Okay, it's going to continue to happen. So we're going to have to police it up. And when we started talking about it, then other people started talking about it, and that's how we're going to have to do it. We're just going to have to do it ourselves, man. That's it, period. You know,
Doug. You know, my book, you read it, and I tried to fillet myself in that book. I didn't try to hold back and look like a Rambo or nobody. I was, you know, I had a lot of problems and everything. But the hospital at Camp Lejeune just bought 300 books for their patients. That's amazing.
Because they did. I mean, your book has had such an impact on me. I was never in a firefight. I was on B-52s dropping bombs and repairing and setting those up, and then as a medic, you know, and the medical team and Bowers later is trying to teach the chem bio and clean up the mess in Iraq, you know,
right.
I guess one thing that, and the whole thing bothers me, I mean, Franks, and I'm not even sure which way to go on that guy, because, Ray, you've seen the order he handed me to lie in my reports.
Right.
And his 2nd Brigade, 2nd Armored Division commander had a bad day in Iraq, and, you know, the DU screwed them all up, and Franks put Bill, Larry, and I, in his own personal helicopter to go up and take care of him, because their army medics in the brigade and division wasn't going to touch him, and we had to go up in Iraq and decon him and close up his wound himself. And I don't know what ever happened to him, because as Ray's totally aware and he's seen the documents now, I still can't even get primary medical care for my own team, and too many of those guys are now died and dead, and they're given up, and their spouses are given up, and Jesus Christ, I mean, there's a breaking point. I mean, for all three of us, it's picked up, and Denise Nichols and Paul was there until he gave up. God, I know, gave us a mission, put us on this thing. Because otherwise, where could we have had the strength and the ambition and the desire to follow through and hold on or even do this radio show today, as hurting as we all are?
Well, here's a little thing that Ray and I have both kind of came to find out, okay? We have to, as we're out here, boots on the ground, and I commend you, Doug, for doing what you're doing, okay? Yeah. We're actually at a high risk ourselves, even higher, because we're back in the fight again, okay? We're here where the axe meets the stone, and like Paul, we have to ensure that we police each other up. I'm talking about the guys that are on the team, the guys that are boots on the ground. And Ray, you know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? We have to make sure that we're being seen and we're getting some help as well, too. Make sure that we talk to each other and we talk about the things that, hey, like Ray and I, we call each other, and a lot of times when we call each other, it's at the right time, isn't it, Ray?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Ray, you and I have been talking since we met, too, haven't we?
I'm talking you off the ledge.
You know, there's a point man and then there's shadow man. Shadow man.
And you know, that process might change. One day I might be the point and you're the shadow, and the next day
it
changes. So that we have to be very careful as we're out here embarking on what we're doing, that we first take care of ourselves and our close battle buddy. And then we help everybody else, because if we fall off to the cracks like Paul did, which is unacceptable, and my heart's broken over that. And Doug, I sent you an email that, man. One's too many. It's enough, period. We can't put up with this. But we have to ensure that as we're out here advocating and fighting for our warriors and their families, that we take care of ourselves in the process. If not, somebody's going to fall.
You know, and one thing that I've been asked, and the chaplains and the military have asked, well, Doug, why don't you and your guys, and this went to Paul and Denise and Ray to be included, and you would be included, why you're doing this, and why don't you quit? I mean, you're bringing more pain on yourself and everything, and I go to the question, well, if you guys did your job, they never would call us. If you did your job, we wouldn't have to discuss it, because all we do is come in and you give us a prompt and optical medical care. You'd look at our records. I mean, had a U.S. Marine Lieutenant Bill Butcher went over a cliff in a Bradley, shot up with DU, hand-walked him into the director's office at Danville VA, and that director has since been fired, and said was, and so was her aide, with the orders for his medical care, and they refused to provide him the mandatory order for DU exposure when I handed him the orders signed by General Shinseki personally.
Wow.
And that has gone on and on and on. I mean, Denise was on the front line up there at Log Base Charlie providing care. She ran medevac at Log Base Charlie, Johnny, and she got cross-contaminated, and she's hot, and she's sick. And she herself, when we up to the Warren G. Clinic in Washington, D.C., found all the neurological, and, my God, we got to stabilize you out from the other exposures before we can go in there and repair the brain aneurysm that you got from the damn nerve agent exposures.
You know, I firmly believe that's what happened to Bill's son, because he was sick ever since he came back from the Gulf War.
Yeah, he was sick. And by the way, I gave that the letter that Bill's son, Bill, when Bill Sr. asked me to get Bill Jr., and this was Ray and Mike, John and Mike and I, the McNeelys, and I just gave it to the director's office at Danville VA and reminded him the other day and said, here's a copy of the request where he asked for help and I asked you for help, and he didn't get it, and he died. You know, yeah. And when they had that funeral, the weather was so horrible here that I couldn't get to the funeral. And I mean, John was, Ray, as you know, John, he was torn apart, and Mike was torn apart.
Yeah.
And Bill was just, you know, losing a son for no reason at all, was ripped in half.
Yeah. Yeah, burying his son at 49 years old, man. Unacceptable.
You know, Doug, I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know, there's two ways to give your life. Jesus said in the Bible that no greater love than this that a man would give his life for a friend. And there's two ways to die, basically. It's one way that you give your life, but the other way is by serving. And a lot of people have served their country, and people don't even realize it, but their life has been altered and so messed up from doing that thing that they have basically given their lives for their country. And we're seeing it happen all the time. Johnny, I guess they have a website and everything up for anybody who would probably want to maybe start another group somewhere up in Illinois or wherever they might be. But it's something that each man has to decide, am I going to watch it or am I going to do something? And so you come up with a plan.
We're down to a few minutes here. We only got a couple minutes left on this radio show. We're going to have to continue this next week or the week after we get our thoughts together. But, I'm going to make another call. You know, Secretary McDonald, I've emailed you. We've called you. I've had people in crisis call you. You need to step up to the plate, sir, and lead and fix the problems. You've been offered the suggestions. We've offered them today. The generals, the colonels, ladies and gentlemen, you're out there and everything. You've got to lead and take care of all of us. It shouldn't end up that hand bunch of young, where we once upon young and now we're old, NCOs and junior officers have taken up the ball to lead and try to solve the problems. President Obama, I know Congressman Tim Johnson, I know the other ones, Dennis Kucinich, Chris Shays, Bernie Sanders, have gone to you specifically for help and everything. The ball's been dropped, sir. Anyhow, time, ladies and gentlemen, our time's up. Ray, John, God bless you. Thank you very much. I got no doubt those Marines out of camp, as you know, their lives to you and their families do too. Thank you.
Right on,
Doug.
Thanks a lot for having us on, and you have a blessed day, and let's stay in the hunt. Let's help our warriors and their families, period.
Yeah, I'm still building that bookcase I started when I found out Paul committed suicide.
Doug,
good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll give you a call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.